Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your latest edition of Red Men Weekly. My name is Dan Club, and I'm here to run you through all the best clips from this week on redmenplus.com. And we begin with our final word show as Liverpool's victory over Spurs last weekend at Anfield. Steve Quinn and Steve Plunk spoke about the fallout surrounding Darwin Núñez.
If you're talking about players like Elliott, maybe like Kwanzaa, Luis Diaz, maybe Cody Gakpo playing with confidence, you can say the exact opposite for Darwin Núñez at the minute. It just isn't happening for him. He's clearly, he's in a bad run. I think we'd all agree with that one. 15 minutes isn't the most largest of sample sizes, but actually that 15 minutes probably hurt him more than helped him in the end, because it's just, again, I agree, that you can criticise players. I don't agree that you can abuse players. There's a massive difference.
Oh, yeah.
And I think everyone should understand that one. And we're not going to pile into Darwin here. But the question remains, why do you think it just isn't quite happening for him? Because it clearly isn't. He's one-on-one with a goalie who's not in his box, and he tries to shoot past him. Like, you'd want your centre-forward to just run around that goalie. You either knock it past him, and he either gets sent off or you score. Like, the decision-making at times, I refer back to Michael Owen's criticism of him. When he scored against Brentford with a ridiculous lob, like, it's unbelievable.
The last thing you think.
And Michael Owen said that's not a good thing. Like, it's a great goal, but actually that's not the option you want your centre forward to make. One on one, you want him to make better choices. There's just something, the decision making at times at Darwin just isn't clicking. Do you think is that his issue? I don't know.
And that's one of the few times I would agree with Michael Owen, by the way.
Well, what he does not, he knows what Michael Owen says a lot of bollocks. He knows how to score a goal.
Of course he does. Yeah, we benefited from that, didn't we, for a long time. The thing for me is that to lead a line, you have to have a certain degree of football intelligence, which unfortunately he doesn't have. I'm not going to pile in on him. He is, for me, he's one of those players you said before would want to ideally play off the left, because that's where he started his youth career. He played in his home country. He had himself a move to Europe. He terrorised defences, including ours, in the Champions League. And he got his big move to Liverpool Football Club. And then we decided we'd change all of that and make him a centre-forward, a number nine. And he's not a line-leading centre-forward, and he never will be. And he's not an instinctive, natural goal scorer, and you never will be, because you can't teach that. You can't. You've got it or you haven't. He will always get a proportion of goals because we create a lot of chances. But when you're nil-nil and you're in the 88th minute and the ball comes into the box and a forward's got 10 seconds to think about it, you're kind of hoping it isn't him.
It's fair, it's on.
So he should, for me, and I've been saying this all season, he should be given the opportunity to challenge Diaz for the left wing. And when Salah needs a rest, we just put Diaz on the right. And then we've got Cody and Diogo Jota through the middle. I think that, for me, that would work for me, but what do I know? It's just my opinion.
No, what do you mind? I think
he works really hard. I have an issue with he closes a fullback down and the ball goes into the cop and we get a corner, and then they all start singing Núñez, Núñez, Núñez. You want to be singing Núñez, Núñez, Núñez when he's getting his 10th, his 15th and his 20th goal of the season, don't you? You know, and really make him feel good about himself. I have to be honest, if we were to roll the dice right now and take a punt on replacing him with a more prolific goal scorer, I'd probably, through no fault of his own, I think the football club's got a lot of responsibility for this in terms of trying to put a square peg in a round hole to some degree, I probably would have a look at what options are out there, because having him as a number nine, and as good as his effort is and his enthusiasm, and he can't question that he loves the football club, as a number nine, he's not going to win you the league.
What do you think about him, Quinn? What's your thoughts? Because this isn't me just judging my 15 minutes yesterday where he wasn't great. I think it's been fair to say he hasn't had a good run of it recently. You mentioned before how important confidence is for footballers, and he looks completely shot of it. And it's hard with two games to go in a season, and up to this point in games where there's been something riding on most of them at the moment. Maybe the manager's option is that he maybe plays the next two and just tries to get something back into him in games which, listen, Liverpool have finished from third. Now, it doesn't matter what happens against Villa or Wolves, because he looks, of all the players at the moment, he looks like he's a man with zero confidence whatsoever.
And he's a guy who needs confidence. He lives and dies on that, it looks like. And he probably needs a little bit of that smooth jazz from Kwanzaa in his ears. He needs this one sort of wild, calm, just chill a little bit. And, you know, Jota seems like we all love Diogo, and we know what he brings. And like you said, some guys you probably just can't teach that to, you know. And he knows where goal is at all times, Jota, and he doesn't waste any time. It seems like Nunez wants to smash it, and he doesn't particularly care where he smashes it to sometimes, and where it just calls for a little bit of calm. I don't know. He's young? Is it? And like his background shows that where he's been effective and what he can do, and we trying to force him into something that he's just not made to do. Maybe so. But his energy is infectious. Yeah, there's a time where he can flip a game on its head. Coming in as a sub. He's had some amazing moments. Obviously Newcastle, like you said, Brentford,
Forest.
Yeah. Maybe I don't know. Yeah, I kind of agree that that's where he should probably be, is on the left. Maybe he needs a little bit of sports psychology. Maybe there's something that can. He's so young that you wonder if with that temperament, if there's something that can be worked on to help him slow down in those moments, to where all you just need is a tap and just pass it into the left there. It doesn't have to be full throttle all the time. With a new manager and a new way of communicating, we talk about Klopp being heavy metal and being, there might be something about this new manager that is a calming influence. It might find a way to utilize him, or not just utilize him, but find a way to connect to him that allows him to slow down. And I still think there's something he's going to show us that is still remains to be seen. It wasn't a good look when, sort of that whatever happened on Instagram. And it's coming to the end of the year. He's young. He needs some time, an off season to come and calm down. And I'm really curious with this new fella. He seems to be that kind of Zen kind of, he has a lot of the same philosophies, but he has a different way of connecting and what he wants out of these guys. And I think there's something more we're going to see from Darwin.
I suppose as well, Steve. It's difficult because I go back to the question. If Jürgen was here next year, and because he's not, that's a huge caveat, he's not, but there would be logic if you were Jürgen Klopp thinking, you know what, I'm going to play him in two games and just hope that he can get a little bit of confidence. Because last thing I need is him going into the summer feeling like he has to delete pictures off his Instagram. This is the guy who in his first ever pre-season was shushing the crowd and doing...
Right.
He clearly hears the noise.
Yeah.
If you were Jürgen and you were thinking, next year I've spent £80 million or whatever spent on this guy, he's my project, that, you know, I was part of the decision to bring him in, I'm going to give him a couple of games, just try and get him a bit of confidence, let him hopefully scores at Villa, hopefully scores Wolves, and just goes into the summer feeling good about himself. There's a Copa America, maybe he can go there feeling good when he goes and plays for Uruguay as well. But Jürgen's leaving, and it's not, and you know, I heard him say the other day, like, you know, about Salah, it's not my problem anymore. I'm not saying that Jürgen doesn't give a toss about Darwin Núñez, but Jürgen really wants to win these last couple of games. You would think for him, you know, the last thing he wants is Wolves at home getting beat or drawing his last ever game. He'll want to win that game for everybody. And that's the difficult thing with Darwin here, isn't it? It feels like if we're going to see him, we're probably going to see 15, 20 minutes of him. And then if that goes badly, it just feels like there's a snowball here and somebody's got to melt it. Somebody's got to stop them and just calm it all down, because it's getting a bit toxic and it's not nice for him. It's not nice, certainly, that anyone who abuses people on the internet is an idiot anyway. But I don't know. I'm quite conflicted with what the best option from here is. Just not play him. Just knock him on the head and go, listen, Darwin, go and have your summer. That's an option too. I don't know. What would you do in the manager situation?
Well, what is interesting is when you ask Quinn his point, before he spoke, you could literally see pain in his face, because we actually love the guy and he loves the football club, we resonate with that. And for that reason, we want to put our arms around him and give him love and say everything will be okay. But sentiment doesn't win you football matches, does it? You have to be honest about that. So right now, Cody Gakpo is in the driving seat to play the last two games of the season because of what he gives to the team.
And Diaz on the
left. And Diaz on the left, and Salah's back. It looks like he's got a spring in his step again on the right. So they're actually, from a footballing perspective, there probably isn't any reason to change that. I it's really difficult when we had the blow up with Salah and you think, okay, is that the catalyst that means he leaves the football club? You could see a world where you put Diaz on the right, you put Nunes down the left, and you went with Gakpo or Jota through the centre. And I'd sort of looked beyond what was going on. I thought, I'm okay with that, you know, because Diaz is good on the right as well. He goes past people on the right. He's energetic, wants to beat people. He's very effective at the moment. I just don't see the sense in getting a guy who's had a bit of criticism in Gakpo, getting him into the team, getting him playing well, getting him contributing a goal and an assist. What message are you sending your centre forward if you take him out the team after a goal and an assist?
It's not Cody Gakpo's fault. It's not his
problem. No,
fault.
It's not. Yeah, but equally, it shouldn't become Cody Gakpo's problem.
Exactly.
Because you want to fit Darwin Nunes in. You should play through the middle, scoring goals. That's his job, to score goals. Yeah. Number nine on your back, that's football's remit forever and a day and always will be. No need to change it at the moment. The new manager's going to come in and have a look at what we do. He'll play with a slightly different setup. From what I can see, he plays with two central strikers. Is that Mo Salah and Darwin Nunes together? Is it? I don't know how that works. Salah will tell you he's got a great relationship with Nunes, and they do find each other quite a bit. If you look across their goals, Nunes had something like 8 or 9 assists for Salah, hasn't he? So is there something in that? Is it the way we play? Is it what we do? But we've kind of swapping the managers like for like, because if you look at all our key stats in terms of the press, the only team that's done better than us is Slot's team. You know, if you look at the dynamics. So we're not going to go through a season of massive upheaval in terms of the basics of the game. But for the last two games of the season, I think you're sending Cody Gakpo the wrong message if you make room for Darwin Nunes to play. I'm not piling on Darwin Nunes. I think he's got loads of really good attributes, just not through the middle for me. Gakpo's earned the right to play the last two games for me.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the manager does and what everyone does. But if you're abusing people on the internet, which I know our subscribers don't, then you're a clown. Criticism's fine, abuse is very much not, so be nice to people.
Yeah, that is a story that has ran and ran this week, not only on the basis of his not happy attitude at the end of that particular game and his misfiring overall generally on the pitch, but also his social media antics have set tongues wagging, I think it's fair to say. Next up, myself, Chloe, Chris and Paul spoke about the title race, which unfortunately the Reds are no longer involved in.
Right, title race. I realised how little I cared about this when the weekend rolled around and I went, oh God, yeah, the Arsenal and City are playing. But I also equally realised that, as per our conversation last week, I got a little nervous watching when Arsenal got the win, and I was thinking, oh God, now City now need to win because there could be pressure, you know, the pressure could be on City and blah, blah, blah. I am delighted to report that the pressure is firmly on Arsenal, because as much as they played first and then City just, I mean, a couple of dodgy penalties, so you know, penalty in particular, not the most stonewall of penalties to kick them off, but yeah, Haaland just scoring loads of goals, yeah. City scoring loads of goals, City, you know, okay, they're in second at the moment, but yeah, it feels like, Chloe, that yeah, the pressure is very much on Arsenal and not on Man City.
Especially when it's Manchester United that they've got up next. And look, they've overcame the North London Derby, which was a massive game of football. They overcame Chelsea in really good fashion as well. But also Manchester United absolutely despise them. And they've had, you know, quite decent rivalries, obviously, ever since the 2000s. So, look, it's not easy. I think they'll look at that Spurs City game and have a bit of hope, because I feel like you would, even in the kind of way Spurs are going right now, you don't bank on Manchester City winning at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. However, it was absolutely delightful when, you know, it felt like it was against Bournemouth. They cheated the way to a penalty to start off with Kai Havertz. But it felt like a 3-0 victory was a very, very tough victory. Like, you'd think if you just looked at the scoreline, they battered them there. But it wasn't quite like that. Bournemouth missed a load of chances. And it felt like a kind of relief once they'd got the third, they get over the line, and it's like, oh, over to you, Manchester City. And within 5 minutes, there's a penalty, there's a goal, and it ends up like 4-1 or something. And it's like, yep, welcome to what we've all had to deal with for how many seasons?
Five,
enjoy it.
Five.
Haaland's only getting four of them. So, yeah, it was nice to just, because then you saw, like, because they'd be doing what we did, where it's like, you sit down, you put the TV on, and then instantly 5 minutes later, you turn it back off. And yeah, it's nice to not be in that, in a sense of the stress. I'd much rather be in it. But it's nice that someone else is happy to go up against Manchester City, and if they lost on the final day of the season like we did by a point,
it shows what bitter human beings we all are deep down. But yeah, I want Arsenal to have their hearts broken in whatever way is the most heartbreaking way. I want that. I just do, you know. It's like that moment in The Simpsons where you see Ralph Wiggum get his heart broken. You can see it, the moment that his heart breaks into that moment.
I'm sorry, but it is just mainly because that if any of those 115s go against Manchester City, all of their titles in my mind are void, I can deal with that a lot easier.
Yeah, that's right. I just looking at the potential points tallies there. The most points Arsenal can put down if they win their final two games will be 89 points, which that's another thing, because it's a good points tally that by all accounts.
Really good.
But it would really annoy me. It would really fucking annoy me for them to win it on that, and you know, for City to win it, City, because the most they can get to is 91. So yeah, 91. I mean, at least it's
when you look at it, it's actually been quite a bad season due to, you know, recent history.
It just does my head in. That, and the last season was like that as well. When you're just going, God, couldn't our best Liverpool have had a little bit more of that Man City as opposed to the one that we did, the fucking Centurions, the ones who just pissed 90 points for a laugh.
Delight.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently not. So yeah, in terms of what comes next for both of those teams, then Arsenal still to come Sunday, Manchester United at Old Trafford, followed by the Ever Home. There's, you know they're getting 3 points.
What a banker.
Yeah, that is an absolute banker in the sun. Arsenal just getting what they need to get done against the Ev.
Mm-hmm.
But that Man United game, Chris, I mean, we forget sometimes that there's a really heated rivalry between them, and United have done it to us already. I think it'll be a similar sort of environment. You know, their fans will be bang up for just spoiling Arsenal's fun as well.
They will be, of course, but I'm 5 or 6 nil to Arsenal here, honestly. Like, they're going to absolutely wipe the floor with them.
You think?
I really do. I really do. I know the narrative and all this type of stuff is great to talk about. Arsenal are miles fucking better. Rock up, piss all over them and fucking walk off with 3 points into the sunset.
Wow.
That's fine. We were miles better than Manchester United and we didn't piss off into the sunset with 3 points.
I mean, there's more play when it comes to our rivalry with them than there is the Arsenal one. I think particularly when you throw in the angle of Man City or the team they're competing with, and they've been there exactly fan favourites at Manchester United either, so I'm not sure it'd be quite as intense or quite as hostile as what we're saying. But yeah, I honestly believe now that they both just win out from here on out, and I think they both look very imperious. So actually, you know, to give credit to Arsenal, not just for the entire season that they've had, because they've probably been the standout team in the entire
league.
They've
dealt with the pressure, haven't they?
They've dealt with the pressure brilliantly. And the question marks for me, as we all three of us headed into this running, were, can Arsenal, we've been caught some distance at this, can Arsenal do similar and just go win, and they have. So they've been imperious, but unfortunately for them, much like we found to our own downfall in the past and our own demise, Man City have done exactly the same thing.
The only difference here is when we were in a title race against Manchester City, we could never get over the line and take 4 points off them in a season. We just could not do that. Arsenal have done that. Yeah. Arsenal have done that, and it's still not in their hands.
Yeah. It's good. It's so interesting to kind of watch it from outside. Not as interesting as it is being on the inside of it. You know,
more relaxing.
Yeah. But again, weirdly, sort of not, because again, I've got a mad little side stake on this one, and that is, I would feel loads happier if, you know, if they just stopped it now, to be perfectly honest. But the closest thing to them cancelling this league is Man City winning it. Yeah, like, in terms of how I feel very emotionally true. About very it. True. It's a very fractional difference between the two, unfortunately. But yeah, it's interesting to see how it plays out. Do you want a random aside? I don't know whether any of you have thought this, but when I was watching the Liverpool Spurs game, I think I said it in my post-match video, but our performance against Spurs conclusively proved a bit more of what Chris has been saying, for, you know, said weeks ago, that we are clearly the third best team in this league, and that it conclusively proved that we were right to be nowhere near the battle for fourth. We're miles better than Spurs and Villa, but obviously not being quite good enough to be, you know, consistently in the title race right to the end. But it got me thinking about that third place finish, and if we win our final two games of the season, we'll finish on 84 points, which will be the most points anyone's ever finished on and finished third in the league, which couldn't be more Liverpool.
Yeah. Won a lot of leagues, I bet that.
It has won. 84 points would have won you the Premier League 8 times in the past. 84 points. That we will finish third. If we finish third on that this season, is batshit crazy. Just for a bit of context, for that, that's what gets
United. Now that United and Arsenal rivalry was massively overhyped in terms of point scoring,
in terms of quality
like
and points.
The first, I think, the first 3 or 4 seasons of a 20-team Premier League were all sub 80 points. I will bear maybe one that was slightly more, but again, we'd have pissed the league in those seasons with the
points. But
do you
remember when Rafa was there? 65 was your target for fourth, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was like crazy. I remember people saying that at the start of the season, you get to 65, you get fourth, you get Champions League.
It's moved.
Villa are on 67 with 2 games to play
exponentially, hasn't it?
But
that's the season,
but again, just for from a Liverpool slant on that, it's a context that no one will care for, but it is interesting. I take comfort in that, and I took it in winning the Champions League helped in 18-19, but knowing that the league would have been won in every season bar that season and the season before was something to me. And there is a little bit of that for me this time around, of like knowing that that Liverpool team was good enough to win the league. It just wasn't good enough to win a league that Manchester City playing, unfortunately. But I mean, like shit, we do exist in that world. For a while now,
it does show you that we're not a million miles away. I'll put it like that in a way. Albeit, you know, we are going to end up a decent amount of points short of Arsenal and Manchester City on this occasion. But I think, given what we underwent last summer and all that, and it's meant to be a bit of a rebuild season, I think perspective will add the fact that, listen, the trophy in top four ultimately is a decent campaign. But I think it does show us that point, Sally, if we do indeed end up on that a couple of signings, a couple of bit of fine tuning, as you mentioned before, a couple of tweaks here and there, and who knows what we're capable of.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry, and some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs. United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yeah, just all around grim, basically, isn't it? We'll try to ignore that and never speak of it again, and just concentrate solely on matters that do actually relate to the Reds in the future. And finally, Steve was joined by Neil Jones, as ever, for this week's Journo Insight. And they also spoke about Darwin Núñez and what the future holds for the Uruguayan striker.
Right, then let's move on to a couple of topics. I want to start with your man with the Darwin Núñez stuff. For those who don't know, obviously if you're not active or totally active on social media, you might not know, but Darwin Núñez went through his Instagram account. He deleted every picture pretty much to do with Liverpool Football Club. There was reports, of course, that he'd been suffering, him and his partner actually, have been getting some pretty horrible messages after his recent performance against Tottenham. We saw Nico Williams go through something similar a few years ago, Neil, when he went through. It's a very modern way of showing, like, that something's not right. I think also it just shows like they are young kids and like these things can affect them. But what have you made of the whole discourse around this?
Yeah, I mean, I did notice today that he hasn't done it on Twitter, has he, or X?
No.
Because I noticed he replied to Luis Suarez's message or a Luis Suarez post with Idolo.
I think it's easier to do on Insta.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. But everything's what he would normal for his ex. So I don't. It's difficult to speculate on his intentions. Obviously, you can read the obvious into it. There's something that's annoyed him. He did it when he first joined Liverpool, didn't he? I think it was on Twitter.
Doing the Silencia thing, the friendly.
He wrote resilience, didn't he, on his message after he had a little bit. I mean, I think it was his first pre-season goal. So clearly, you can read into that he does have a handle on what is being said about him or to him, on social media. It would be a terrible shame if Liverpool fans had made him feel like, you know, he doesn't want to have those pictures up that are getting comments underneath, or, you know, receive messages on the back of certain pictures around Liverpool or whatever. I get it, not about me. It gets me down when I find myself on a general football post and you click on it and it might have like Mo Salah has now scored 25 goals in six consecutive, whatever it is. And then you end up some sort of in this like sort of rabbit hole of comments and just people arguing under the line saying, yeah, but he never did it in this game, or they're all penalties, or the, you know, I find myself sometimes having to catch myself on and say, oh, stop reading them. Doom scrolling indeed. And I don't get too much sort of aimed at me or anything like that. But so anyone can do it, can't they? Just because he's a number nine, just because he's an international footballer, paid a lot of money and you know, high profile, doesn't mean he's you don't do that. So it would be the biggest shame would be that if it was coming from his own supporters, because really, and if he was to feel that way, I would, my message to him would be, just listen to what the fans when you're in the stadium, because I've never seen a player get his name chanted for less in games. Sometimes, you know, like he only has to close down a fullback, or he can have a loose touch and then make a slide tackle or whatever. And Nunes, you know, the support he's had in the stadium throughout his Liverpool time is what Liverpool's support is.
Do you think
judge it by social media.
I think you're right. I think I've got a sense that the supporters in the stadiums and in grounds know that he probably needs that, like the certain characters. Yeah. I think we're all pretty good judge of characters. Yeah. Like I think everyone has got a, you know, he probably is the arm around the shoulder guy. I think it started actually with that thing in his first pre-season. A video came out of him missing a couple of chances in the training session, and it was like everyone's piling on. Then he responds like, "Well, obviously this lad's a lad who we're going to have to look after."
Yeah, possibly.
It feels like the fan base in the stadium wants to look after him. I think everyone at times, listen, we've all been, and I think you're allowed to be critical.
Absolutely.
But it does feel like everyone's kind of got a sense with Darwin that he isn't the kick up the backside player. He's the arm around the shoulder, show him some love kind of player.
Yeah, but you know what, I just think Liverpool fans are generally like that with the players. I think back to, you know, Peter Crouch when he came, and you know, was it 15 odd games, maybe even more, that he never scored, and he had a penalty that he missed and things like that. But I just always remember that it was like, I really want him to do it. I think Andy Carroll, you know, I know Darwin gets unfavourably compared to Andy Carroll, but Andy Carroll was never ever, I never ever got the sense, and I went to a lot of Liverpool games when he played, People just willed him to do well, and again, a bit like Nunes, if he won a big header or he rattled a centre back, people loved it and got behind it. You know, it's no coincidence that so many players play their best football when they play for Liverpool, and when they leave, they're not quite there. And I think a lot of it does come down to, I think Fernando Torres is a good example of, you know, he had it at Atletico Madrid, brilliant. He had it at Liverpool, brilliant, the support. He never quite had it wherever he went after that, and he never quite produced the levels of it. And I think in Darwin's case, of course, you know, you think back to that game at Leicester in the Community Shield, and he scores, and like the sort of just that, like it was a Community Shield, you know, like people talk about, they don't care about that game. Massive sort of moment that he scored. I think everyone was just right behind him from that way of going. I think they still are. I think you're right. There's frustration that he misses some chances and that he runs offside a little bit too much. And, you know, listen, I'm not saying everyone who goes to the match is 100% behind them. because people come away from the match and go, oh, I don't know about him, or, you know, we might need to, whatever, wouldn't start and this or that. But when they're there, he gets the full back and a Liverpool fan. So I would urge him not to judge. If he is, that is, by the way, there might be an even, you know, he might be about to unveil a huge Uruguay sort of advertising campaign and he needed to clear up his profile. There could be anything you know, there could be any reason why he's done it. The obvious implication is that. But I would urge him not to judge sort of, you know, the feeling of Liverpool fans by people on Instagram who, you know, basically the only reason you would leave a comment under an Instagram post is to, you know, say something negative.
I suppose, well, listen, we're not here to put the world's right, but my thinking is like, I think it's fine to be critical. I thought he was rubbish against Tottenham. I thought he was. You can see over there in my ranking of him, I put him in the low. I thought he was the worst player when he came on. I thought he did nothing right. But then, I don't mean I want him to feel bad about it. It's just like, listen, I'm asked to judge. I'm asked, how did you think Darwin did? Well, actually, I thought he missed an easy chance. He ran offside too often and he made the wrong decision. So that's fine. It is what it is. I think there's a, I don't know, there's a balance between criticism and abusing people. And I think, I don't know, maybe there's a,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, there is a fine line, and I think everyone can be guilty of crossing it at times, but I think sometimes it's so easy when you're frustrated, oh, I'm going to be angry online, I'm going to tweet, you're a dick, rather than, you know, I think that maybe that's what's playing into it, because listen, it's undeniable that the groans are getting a bit louder for Darwin, as well as the supporters. There are times when I'll be honest, it's almost gallows humour, he's offside again. And so I do think there's a bit of that to it as well.
Yeah.
So the frustration's growing, but it can't turn into abuse because it's just no good for anybody.
No, and I think there is a little bit as well. I think on Instagram in particular, actually, but Twitter X to a degree. But everything's boiled down into these one sentences, aren't they? So Darwin Nunez's season becomes, no player has missed more big chances, or no player has been caught offside more, or, you know, whatever, some sort of statistic that it tells you 0.1% of the story of a player's season or whatever, but it becomes everything, doesn't it? So you get, like, you know, you get these sort of weird ones. I saw like no team has conceded as many shots as Manchester United since January the 1st, and it's like, well, does that mean, you know, like, what about December the 31st? Is that still apply then? You know, like, but that's it's engagement, isn't it? We're all a little bit guilty of it. We'll put up a picture and invite a comment. What do you think? What did you think of X's performance? Who would your midfield be this game? Or what would your team selection? Who would you like to see Liverpool sign? So it invites that level of it. But obviously, Darwin seems to me, and his history tells you, that he is someone who A, sees it, and B, pays attention to it. I would hope that he would also see the bigger picture of it, which is, look, you know, he's a youngish player. Of course, he's come with a big price tag. He's got a big reputation, but he's a youngish player who can get better. And if he does continue on the upward path, he'll have the full back and the Liverpool supporters certainly in the stadium. I'm of the opinion, and I'm not, this isn't just because, oh, he's, you know, he's shown he might be upset about something, but I think Liverpool should persist with him. I don't agree with this sort of idea that that this is the summer. And listen, I've got friends and people who are sensible sort of commentators on football who think that Liverpool should sell him. I don't. I think keep him. He gets in that many positions. He gets that many chances. He impacts games. He's got things to clear up, but try and clear them up. Don't just say, oh no, he can't do it. He can. We've seen him do it. He's done it at Benfica. He's had a good season at Liverpool. Again, he's a little bit like Liverpool season overall. Take him up to April. Yeah, he had a great season, Darwin Nunez. Take him April to May. He's not really done it. I think he's worth certainly carrying on with.
And do you think he will? Because obviously this is the question. Is that he was brought in the period where Michael Edwards wasn't here.
Yeah.
He was brought by, you know, Jurgen Klopp apparently was very heavily influencing on that decision to bring him in. He's leaving as well. So actually everybody who signed Darwin Nunez is probably not involved in the football club per se. And also, Neil, I was thinking, like, you see this sometimes with Chelsea, and you see, obviously, could they change a lot? But, like, it wasn't... I think sometimes if you make what you perceive to be an error in the, and I'm not saying he was one, but if you almost feel obliged to stick with it because it was my mistake, I need to see this through. like, there's nobody there who was involved with signing Dowry. So if they wash their hands of him, they can go, well, it wasn't our problem. So yeah, that's the only, because I agree, if Jürgen was here, probably wouldn't even be a question, but because he's leaving, there's, like I say, it's a clean slate for everybody, really. What do you see the future with Darwin for next season and beyond?
Yeah, well, I think it would depend on what would you be getting by selling him. You know, with the best will, you're not going to get what you paid for him. I don't see too many markets for him as a number nine at this moment. I don't
think some Barcelona rumors.
Barcelona aren't going to be signing a player for big money this summer. You know, that their financial situation is, yeah, they're going to be looking to keep hold of the players that they've got. Yeah. I think more so than anything else. I don't see Barcelona signing Darwin Nunez when they've already got Robert Lewandowski and, you know, various others that they're worried about anyway. But I think it's difficult to judge unless you've got a bid on the table, really. Yeah. I just look at it and say, well, he's your second top scorer this season. He's his second top assister. He might even be the top assister. I think Salah might be just above him. You know, whatever you think about moments in games when he misses chances, the overall trend of him is that he makes a positive impact on Liverpool's attacking. He gets in good positions to shoot. He gets plenty of goals. He gets plenty of assists. He could get more, of course. Like, he's worth the place in the squad for sure. You know, if he didn't have the price tag, I don't think there'd be the question about it. I think it'd be, you know, yeah, he's one of the rotation parts, but none of Liverpool's other forwards, Salah is an island on his own, but the others, look, you know, Luis Diaz has got his faults. Luis Diaz probably doesn't have as much output as you'd want. Cody Gakpo's had a really good finish to the season, but he had an indifferent spell. Diogo Jota's got a lot of injuries, I think, and he's capable of obviously having a brilliant season, but can he keep him fit for there? Darwin's got as much upside as any of them, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you're right, by the way, he's joined top with Mo Salah.
There you go, yeah.
13 assists and 8.
Yeah, so I mean, listen, and of course, you know, you always say he could have had more, but okay, he might have more next season. You know, I still see the upside, obviously, the glass half full, or 31. The Costa Cup half full.
31 goal involvements. For example, you compare them to Luis Diaz. I know Luis Diaz missed a bit of time as well, but so did Darwin.
Yeah.
He's got 13 goals in all comps.
Put appearances up. I bet you he's got more appearances than,
let's have a look,
than most of the others.
He's top.
Top, there you go.
Nobody's played more games for Liverpool.
There you go. So, I mean, that's availability as well is a big part, yeah, of what you want from him. So, of course, I see the upside in Nunez. I really do. And, yeah, I hope he's all right. I'm sure he is. I'm sure next week, you know, when he scores at Villa or whatever, and he has his name chanted by the away end, there'll be a smile on his face. But, you know, just a shame that he's obviously, something seems to have upset him.
Yeah, boss, as ever from Neil, and I tend to agree with him on his stance on Darwin. I do think there remains very much a future at the Reds for him, and hopefully Arne Slot can get the best out of him, because it's definitely a player there. We just need to find it on a more consistent basis. Yeah, boss, that's everything for Redmen Weekly. Make sure you head to redmenplus.com, use the code SLOT, as in Arne Slot, to get 50% off a captain yearly subscription. I will see and speak to you again very soon. Take it easy.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.